Welcome to The Creative Switch, the podcast inspiring the sensibly successful to switch on their unexpressed creativity for a more fulfilled life. In today's episode, I'm chatting to Mike Hall, whose career took him from technical illustrator to managing director, and then co-founder of his own marketing agency, before he returned to his true passion, creating art. Find out what happened when a kitchen redesign and an empty space on the wall became the spark that led to his creative switch. And if you're looking to turn your creative inspiration into action, don't forget to listen right to the end of the episode and catch up with my creative adventures. I share the challenges I encounter and how acting on the nuggets I've learnt from my guests and applying those learnings is helping me to move forward in my own creative projects. This time, if like me, you aren't always sure of which creative direction to choose, I have another fabulous piece of advice from Holly Matthews to help you find your creative compass. Before we get to that, do remember to head to my website, nikkivalance.com, and sign up to join the Creative Switch community and get involved in the creative conversation. You can connect with like-minded creatives, find a safe space to share your challenges, support each other, and maybe even collaborate to create something together. First, it's time for some creative news in The Edge. Things are changing all around us in the ways we live and work. And two issues on this are front and centre of the news this week in the creative and cultural sectors around copyright protection and freelancer pressures. The creative sector, a vibrant tapestry of artists and writers and filmmakers and designers and makers of all sorts, thrives on innovation and imagination. However, it faces significant challenges that threaten its vitality. This week, the National Law Review reported a failure to reach agreement between the government and the UK Intellectual Property Office in their attempt to create a voluntary code of practice on copyright and generative AI. This impasse highlights the delicate balance between protecting intellectual property and fostering technological advancement. Striking the right balance is crucial. Copyright laws are there to protect the originators of creative output, but if overly onerous, could inhibit developers from building useful generative AI tools. We have to ask the question, what constitutes new content? This tech revolution challenges traditional notions of authorship and ownership, and we as creatives will need to ensure that proper value is placed on our work, and that we move forward with our eyes open to leverage AI to our benefit rather than our detriment. And freelancers form the backbone of the creative sector. From filmmakers to sound engineers, they infuse projects with their unique talents. However, their livelihoods are under threat. An article in Screen Daily, the digital magazine for the film sector, reports an open letter by the head of BECTU, the Broadcasting, Entertainment, Communications and Theatre Union, to the UK government, highlighting the freelancer crisis affecting its members, who work in all the off-screen roles within the sector. It is a crisis for all freelancers in the wider gig economy, of course, but is particularly felt in the entertainment industry. Both the pandemic, which exacerbated the already precarious situation for these artists, who often work project to project and face financial instability, and the cost of living crisis, have put a huge economic and emotional pressure on these individuals. Many have been forced to look elsewhere for a more stable existence, leaving skills gaps and staff shortages behind them. On the plus side, wherever there is creative talent, there is the possibility for creative thinking, innovation, and finding ways around a problem. Sometimes reinvention brings something new and exciting to tap into, new ways of working, and an ability to see a difficult situation as an opportunity. I, for one, will be watching closely to see how these stories unfold. Head to the bottom of the show notes where all the links I've mentioned are listed under The Edge. Are you thinking about a freelance creative career or looking for advice and support? Or maybe you've already worked this way and could share some tips on the ways to protect your IP and navigate the financial uncertainty. Do let us know in the Creative Switch community or on Instagram at Nikki_Valance. And listen next to my conversation with someone who is putting his experience of running his own marketing agency to good use in his new venture as an artist, Mike Hall. Welcome, Mike, to the Creative Switch. It's lovely to have you here.
Thanks for asking me, Nikki. Nice to meet you.
Now, we have lots to discuss. We don't know each other, but you've been introduced to me by one of my other guests who comes on earlier in the series, Helena. And there's definitely something that fits my audience for the podcast. So before we go into all the chat, could you tell everybody a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, sure. My name is Mike Hall and my business is called MJH Art Studio. Now, the business itself has only been going for probably 5 or 6 months now, but I basically create abstract art using clients' branding colours or the colour palette they want. My background is all around marketing and illustration. I've taken the leap of faith of going, right, do you know what? Now's a bit of a time for a change. And that's why I've set the new business up to do exactly that.
Fantastic. I'm going to start with a question I ask everybody.
Yeah.
Because I love the wide variety of answers that I get for this question. What does creativity mean to you?
I think for me, it's just about having the opportunity to do something you really want to do and not be kind of judged by it. And I think it's so easy to try and either focus or pick on something and think that's what people want. But actually, what you need to be thinking is actually, what do I want to do? What do I want to create? You know, it's too easy to try and replicate or copy someone else's and things. You know, clearly, when we look at art, there's all sorts of different things that you see and there's bits of different artists. But for me, it was about, you know, I'm going to do something I want to have a go at, give it a go. Stems back to my years back in college, back in the 80s. I'm thinking, right, I need to re-pick this up again. So it's about having the freedom to do what I want. And if people like it, brilliant. And if they don't, well, that's fine as well. You know, that's the beauty of what we do. It's so subjective. So there's no right and no wrong in my book. It's just doing what you want to do. Do it to the best of your ability.
Okay, brilliant. I think it's a smashing idea. So tell us, where did that idea come from to put brand colours? So you could use your creativity, but also target it towards something that people would perhaps pay for.
I have to be honest about how this all came about. So we'd had a new kitchen fitted at home and couldn't find anything I wanted. And I've had a canvas literally for years with nothing on it. And I just left it there. I said to Mrs. H, go on, I'll do something. You know, the usual roll of the eyes, oh, really? Okay, let's see what this will look like. And I just threw some colours, you know, down on the canvas and I thought, actually, this is all right. I quite like this. We found the colours in the blinds, the units, so all those different colours really came together. And you sort of see a natural palette. And then I thought, oh, this could be quite fun. So I did a few more test pieces and things like that and put it on Instagram and Facebook. And I had a client who we were working with in the marketing business phone me up and said, love it, Mike. Can I have one in my colours? So I went, yeah, all right. And he went, how much? I went, no idea, but we'll give it a go. And because of my marketing background and I've worked on brands and I've helped design them and I've worked with some very big brands in the past, usually when you've got a color palette, they tend to work really well because a lot of time and effort's been gone in to see what colors complement, what work, what doesn't work. So you've gone through all that pain. Why not then take those colors and use them?
Yeah.
So I developed, you know, a few techniques and started throwing them down and thinking, actually, well, what would make the best base color, which way it'll work? So that's how it all started. And with everything that I do test pieces for clients to making sure that actually I'm getting those colours right. So whether it's as getting close to a Pantone mix as I can do. I mean, I've done some stuff now where I've actually used, you know, Farrow & Ball colour paint because that's what they got on their wall. Looking at the colour palettes, working at how you can work with them and a bit more of this colour, you know, maybe bringing talks to the accent colour. And it started that way. So I did this one. Although the client said to me, can you get this framed? I went, yeah, fine, okay. I went to the most miserable framer you've ever seen in your life. It's just like, really? Someone's paid you to do this? I went, yeah. And he went, oh, right, okay, fine. It's taking those then colours. And then once one client saw it, someone else saw it. And so actually, can I do a similar kind of thing? And over time, I've developed a few more styles and techniques for doing things where I can actually then go now with a portfolio and show the client, say, look, this is what I've done. This is how I work with them. You know, what size do you want? And we can work that way. So that's what I've really found is my kind of niche. Although I've done stuff for interiors as well for people's homes where they've got certain colors, or I'm doing one for a moment where they've got a big steel staircase in the atrium. So we're picking up colors from that, picking up colors from the trees and all this kind of stuff. So wherever you look, there's kind of inspiration for palette colors as well. So yeah, that's how it all started. It was purely by this new kitchen we had fitted and me thinking, yeah, I'm going to move it there. Go.
That's a fantastic story. I love it. Love it. Obviously, you talk there about picking it up again. You mentioned that phrase. So where did the creativity all start?
Yeah, we're going back to 1982 when I left school, went to college. And my background is I studied to be what we call a technical illustrator. So think about things like car manuals with cutaways of cars and gearboxes and all those kind of things. And back at the time then when I was at college, we did some stuff on a BBC Micro, but there's no Macs involved or anything like that. So we learned how to figure draw, how to work with acrylics, gouaches, screen print, watercolor, engineering, perspective, you name it, you know, taking photography and manually processing your films and all the rest of it. So that's where it all kind of stems from. Although with the technical side of things, it was very kind of, you know, you're working with ellipse guides and rulers and straight lines and all those kind of things to create these fantastic images. But also you're encouraged to explore different mediums as well. So charcoals and paints and all sorts of things. And I guess as my kind of career developed, I spent 5 years at college in Blackpool, which was the top college in the country for developing illustrators. And I started working then. The Mac literally had just come out when I was leaving college. So we worked on the old Mac Classic, which had a, like, you know, a little square screen, and, you know, Photoshop didn't exist. And then once everything became all electronic, you started to lose some of the creativity. And it's great drawing with a pencil on an iPad, and it's just not the same. And I think that's what I was missing, to be able to, you know, get a sketchbook out and sketch and draw and paint. And a few of the friends of mine do watercolors and things like that. It was just that yearning, I think, to create something from a blank bit of paper or a blank canvas, rather than, you know, working with a mouse and a screen. Mm-hmm. It's just so nice to be able to get messy, you know, throw stuff around and get paint everywhere. Although Mrs. H doesn't really approve, but I did get banned from the house, so.
So have you got a place that you, a studio that you work
in? Well, I've got a big 8x8 space. Technically, it's a shed, but a studio to the right people. But it's certainly better than doing it in the house where I got told off several times.
And presumably that makes it slightly easier in terms of that process you mentioned. You don't have to put it all away.
That's right. I mean, yeah, if I'm getting really busy, then you'll still find stuff, you know, kicking around the house. But it is that process. And part of what I've done over the past few months is develop this, you know, 7-step process that I take people through, which is from the find out what they want through to test pieces and make sure they're happy with it, then involving them with videos and photographs and stuff all the way through the process. So it's important to have somewhere for me to go and sort of do this kind of stuff. And yeah, who knows where that might lead? You know, one day I won't mind my own studio space. It's everything a bit at a time. This is a new venture, a new business. So you're obviously mindful of costs and expenditure and things like that, because everything all adds and adds and adds. And it'd be easy to go, oh, yeah, let's go and find a studio space and we'll go and do this. And then it's like, right, where's the work coming from? But it's a case of, for me, going, actually, we need to do this properly, but in the right way. And then, you know, having a space, great, that's the goal. That's what we want to work with. So that's what we're aiming to, but it just takes time.
I think that's a great lesson. I think a few of my other guests have mentioned it. It's one of the things I'm trying to practice at the moment, which is being mindful of where you're at and enjoying that part of where you're at in your career and being patient, not expecting it all to happen straight away. And it's difficult when you've got a visual brain, and I'm sure that's why you do what you do, is because you've got a visual brain. I can really easily see where I want to go. I can build that image of what the goal I'm trying to achieve looks like. Mm-hmm. But it's sometimes very, very easy to get caught up in what that future thing looks like and forget about what you're doing today and enjoying what you're doing today. It's a really good lesson.
That's really true. And so I was in the original business when I left college. I was there for 30 years, ended up being MD of the business. So I'm doing nothing creative at all. It was all people stuff.
Yeah.
And then had the opportunity to hit 50, kids had left home. I bought the sports car, I jumped out of a plane, I've done all that kind of midlife stuff, and thought, so I had the opportunity to set the marketing agency up. That's for the last 7 years. But doing that, you learn so much on how to set a business up and how to run it, things not to do, the things right to do. And there's a few things I've learned. I couldn't have done what I do now, I don't believe, without going through what I've done, because it's all around surrounding yourself with the right people, having the right team around you, not getting involved in stuff you don't want to do, you don't like doing. And if you can afford it, outsource it. So I'm working with a VA now who schedules up all my social media because, you know, I just ponder too much on it. And I've got a great accountant who I work with who keeps me accountable for numbers. So having the team of people around you and people you can talk to, that's the biggest thing, because it's so easy to get carried away with all the creative stuff, and you've got to keep yourself out there. You've got to keep yourself visible as a brand, as a company, because as soon as you're doing something else, then that's not happening. So it's so important to keep your name out there, your brand out there, your visibility, so people know about you. It takes ages to build this brand and reputation. And, you know, when you talk about your social media things, and the 95% of people just sit on the phone and flick through things. They won't comment. They don't like stuff.
Yeah.
So it's not being too down and all that kind of thing, but it's so important to raise the awareness, especially when you're starting off something that's new. You've got to get your name out there. I mean, I've been doing stuff over lockdown for the past sort of 2 or 3 years, doing bits on the side. But then it became a point where actually a couple of people said to me, are you an artist? Are you marketing? What do you do? And you start confusing yourself with the messages. So it's about being really clear on what it is you're trying to achieve.
Yeah, that's very true. I struggled with that. I struggled with it more at the point when I was writing my novel, hadn't yet published it. I was earning money from coaching other people who were trying to write. They were behind me in the process. They hadn't started perhaps, or they were not confident of themselves or not confident they were going to finish. So I was definitely adding value to their projects, but I wasn't really focusing on mine. And I did eventually get my novel published. And then I tried again, still to do the same, to sort of keep the coaching business really front and center. But then I found it, how do I tell people that actually what I want them to do is read my book? And very recently, what I've decided to do is I have a few slots. They're a bit like gold dust for my coaching clients, because I still want to help people. But actually, I have to focus on me and what I want to try and achieve with my creative outlets. And part of my problem is that I have yet to identify which of the creative outlets are here for me to satisfy myself and just have fun, and which ones are ones that I need to share with the world, because I've got so many different things that I like doing. Some of them, it's clear. I know which pot they sit in. And they all do inform each other. I've got my novels, which that is definitely for other people. I'm writing for other people to read what I've written. But then there's lots of other things. And I'm spending time now at the moment trying to really focus on what it is I'm sharing with the world. It's okay to switch direction. It's okay to try things out. It's okay for them not to work out the way you thought they would, because you learned something from it. Like you said, with your marketing business, you've learned so much from that, that you can now take that and apply that to what you're currently doing so that you can be creative and not do the things you don't enjoy. I'd love to hear from you some of that wisdom that you've brought with you from your time with a marketing agency, and what has worked and what are you applying now, and what perhaps are you not doing? The mistakes you might have made if you hadn't had that experience.
Yeah, I think one of the key things we say to a lot of people, and this has definitely got my marketing head on now, it is about being really clear on who your target audience is and being really focused on who is you're talking to. And the best way I can sort of describe that is, if you were going to communicate to my mum, bless her, she's 82, try and get her on a mobile phone. She's got one. Does she switch it on? No, of course she doesn't. So if you're going to try and communicate to her on social media, whatever, forget it. But if you put something in the letterbox, she'll get it. This is one of the key things. It's about being really clear on what it is you're doing and what problems or what benefits you're giving to those customers, and why would they want your product. And the other thing is, you know, you can say how good you are, but it's getting those client testimonials. So it's focusing on what it is you're doing. What's that one thing that you can say to people when they meet you? And they call it the elevator pitch. You know, if you just spend 30 seconds with someone in an elevator, what are you going to tell them that you do? Or can you explain it to a child? Great. I mean, mine is, I make boring walls look interesting. End of, you know, that's about where it goes. But once you get that worked out and who your customer is, you can then go, right, actually, okay, where can I now put those messages? So, you know, more than likely it's going to be on social media, but what networking do they go? You know, where do they go? Where do they, you know, hang out? And so he's knowing all these little bits. It's like a jigsaw. It's getting all those little parts of the jigsaw ready so that it's, hey, you know, who you're talking to, what am I going to tell them? And where am I going to tell them? So is it online? Is it in a brochure? Is it whatever? But once you start getting all those bits together, you can go, right, okay, do you know what? I'm going to put my message out on LinkedIn because that's where all my customers are. So from my perspective, for what I do, I want to talk to some business owners who've got an office, people who look after offices, so facilities managers. They're great for me because they'll refurb and redecorate. Or I can talk to interior designers because my product will bolt onto what they do. They've got my customers already. So I'm really clear on who I want to talk to. So knowing that, it makes it relatively more straightforward if I'm going to send an email out of what I'm going to talk to them about. So it's about talking to them in a language they understand, but understanding where they are. That's the key thing.
And for someone who understands that principle but doesn't know the customer, so you might know who your customer is you're trying to reach, but you don't know their behavior, you don't know where they are, you don't know what they're doing in terms of which newspapers they read, or you know whether they are on social media or not, and which platforms it is. So that step of finding that out, how did you go about doing that, or how would you go about advising people to do that?
Let's assume you've already done some pieces of work. So for me, I'd already done a piece for a guy who owns a company who wanted something. So I can think, well, what's Andy like? Well, I know Andy's X age, this, and he's got this kind of company. So I'm thinking, right, okay, brilliant. More of those companies who do that kind of thing, I can look where they are. So it's understanding if you've already sold something. It's like, you know, the readers of your book, who reads your book? You can start to profile who they are. And you can spend so much time in digging down to the, what's the family life? Where do they live? What's their social activity? You can go really deep on these, but also asking other people. We sometimes forget that actually, if someone was to ask me and say, well, just talk to me, you can start to tease things out. So you might be an artist out there who doesn't know, but actually if someone asking them the right questions would then pull them out. So there's sometimes it's about engaging with other people who've got that expertise to maybe help you and tease those little things out. But there's loads of stuff online about customer personas and or avatars, as we call them in the marketing world. Yeah. As to how you find, but it's thinking about who's already bought from me and I want more of those, and also who don't I want. That's equally as important.
Definitely.
You know, we've all got those clients who suck the life out of you, and you know, nothing's ever right, and you know, everything goes on, and it's just like, oh, we don't really don't want any more of those, but we love him because he pays us on time, he values what we do. And I think there's another big thing around value alignment. People can often see creativity as this fluffy thing that's out there, but actually it can enhance where you are. So you'd hopefully, you know, reading something and it enhances your knowledge, looking at something on the wall can enhance how you feel. You know, the study's proven that actually a nice working environment can make you work better. Cool. So it's all those kind of things, and people who value what you do and actually can see that, there's time and effort gone into doing this. And it's about pushing yourself out of your comfort zone. I'm a massive believer, and I always have been, that people buy from people. And actually, if you can engage with people and talk to them, not sell, just have a conversation, have a chat, saying, this is what I do, what do you think? And it's just getting yourself out there, meeting people, networking is another massive thing that I do a lot of. It's some people's idea of, I really don't want to do this, walking into a room of strangers, but you just don't know when you talk to people, get them talking about themselves and what they do. And the more you do those kind of things, it's all around this brand awareness. And, you know, we all go and buy any, if we go and buy anything, we've seen it somewhere, we've talked to someone about it, we've looked at review. So you're only doing the same thing for your own business. It just takes a little bit more, maybe bravery in some areas to go and do some of this kind of thing.
Yeah. I think you're right there, that word networking, it does scare some people. Yeah. If you can change your way you think about it, that probably is going to make a big difference. Because if you went to a networking event, and you just said, I'm just trying to find out what people like, what have they not got? And just to get to build that picture of the avatar, pre-market research, isn't it?
It's just talking to people. You know, it is about, I go to these events, never an intention to try and sell anything. It's just about building relationships, because relationships take time. Yeah. You know, 7, 8, 9 touch points with someone before they'll even consider you. Find out about people, chat with them. And that's all they want to do. And once you get them talking about themselves, they'll be happy as Larry to tell you everything. And there's little nuggets you can find. And then it's the follow-up after that. Yeah. Oh, do you mind if I keep in touch? Oh, yeah, we'll go for coffee or find out more about it. But it's those listening skills as well as to what people want and the signals that they give. But it just takes time and practice. And there's people out there who can help you do it. And some are really over the top and a bit heavy, but others are great. It's finding the right one for you.
I think it'd be really helpful for people to know a bit more about the journey from the tech training that you did at college.
Yeah.
So you've had a few different stages in your career. Do you want to talk a little bit more about those different stages?
So I started off as a technical illustrator. So the company I joined was an ex-student from the college I was at. I was his first employee. And it was a case of, you know, we were drawing parts of tractors, David Brown tractors, we were drawing those bits. And then the kind of change came from a conversation in a pub, believe it or not. And this was my boss's attitude. It was always, yeah, of course we can do that. Don't worry about it. So we bumped into a guy who worked for BT Mobile, and he was in the marketing space, and they were struggling with the user guides for pages. Those are things that bleeped when you needed to get in touch with someone. So I drew them. Someone else wrote about it. We put them together in a book, and we sent them off to BT, and they put these in all the boxes. And then the mobile phone came out. We did that. And all the time, this was going more away from the technical stuff, certainly more of the marketing kind of activity and things like that. And ultimately, BT Mobile went through changes and became O2. So by the time we were dealing with O2 and writing some of the content for O2, it was all very much, how's it going to help my life? Not about how you do something, it's about how you do it. So you're automatically going from illustration, now I'm into more marketing speak, some of the big London agencies we were dealing with. And so you start shifting things. And then we had a conversation with someone to do some translation work, so we ended up doing that. So certainly, to that point, I'm thinking, I'm nothing to do with technical illustration, but it's changed. And then going into the marketing business again, it changed again. But you're always, because we're dealing with lots of different companies, you're having to adapt all the time. So from where I started to what I'm doing, that was doing then, completely different. You know, I'm missing all of it. And then all of a sudden to go to the art as well, it's completely switched. If you'd have told me 30 odd years later that now I'd be painting for a living, I'd be like, come on, really? Things just take the twist. And it's about, I suppose, taking the opportunity and always thinking, actually, you know, I set the agency up. I'd got to 50, the kids had left home, and it was now a case of, well, look, if I don't do something now, which is what we set the agency up, and then coming to the point 7 years later, I'm thinking I'm not overly happy because some of the stuff we're doing is very strategic led, which is fine and is exactly the right thing to do, but it wasn't really fulfilling what I wanted. Mm. And actually, I was thinking I could do with getting down to one day a week doing the painting stuff. You know, if I could work 4 days and do the paintings one day, that'd be great. It got to the point where we sat and had a conversation and said, look, I think I'll still carry on doing some of the marketing stuff, but my focus now is going to be on trying to grow the art side of the business because I think that's what I'm enjoying doing. And a few people have said to me, actually, Mike, when you're talking about that, you get really animated and really excited about it. And so I took the decision, thinking, you know, let's concentrate on this one thing. Mm. So there's been a shift definitely from where I started, but from my mind, it's still been in the visual creative space, but I wouldn't be a, you know, technical illustrator now. And besides, a lot of fun's gone out of it. You can click a button now and it does all the stuff that we would take hours to do on the phone. On the board. And so I think there's an element of having all those skills where I said earlier, it was kind of missing out and not getting back hands-on again. So yeah. It feels like he's gone analog completely through the digital phase and everything else and now gone back to analog creativity effectively. So there's elements that I learned 40 years ago that I'm still using now, which is great. In our industry, you never stop learning. There's always something changing with digital technology. But I can also, when I talk to people, I've still got my marketing head on. So if I see an opportunity where people think I need some strategy or whatever, I can go, right, I'll speak to one of my colleagues because they'll be able to do it as well. So, but it is a shift from where I was in the same sphere, if that makes sense. Yeah, a lot more creative and happier. And actually, I'm controlling my own destiny of what I want to do.
Yeah. I tried to say this to my kids who are now adult. And I say, look, sometimes making the decision at the time feels really big because you're thinking it's a binary choice. But everything you do is always going to add up to what you end up doing. You do it for a reason, either to learn that you don't like it or because it's part of something you're picking up along the way. Clearly, if you could have chosen to make money through your art at the point when you were at college, not necessarily doing technical stuff, but actually creating art yourself, if that had seemed reasonable and possible, you may have done that, but you didn't.
It's just the way it is. And I think part of that is because of what we did. It was very technical. So it was taking two-dimensional drawings and making it into a three-dimensional image, which is brilliant. Loved it, doing all the detail and everything else. So you didn't really release that creativity. And I think the other thing is, obviously, you're a lot younger, you know, and so you're thinking too much maybe what other people think about things, or you haven't got the skill set to do it, and so on and so on. So I think it was never really entered my head about being able to create this kind of stuff like I'm doing now, then I probably wouldn't have done it, to be perfectly honest, because it wasn't detailed enough and it wasn't what we were taught to do. You know, you could express yourselves in another way, like, the you know, drawing the human form. But actually, when it came to doing a piece like this and selling it, I think what I've looked at is actually I've looked for the market of which I can attack and go after, and the sector that actually people want this.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have set this out thinking I'm going to paint pictures and hope I sell them. That was a really big, clear thing for me. Having said that, I have committed to an exhibition of which I am going to put some of my own stuff in it, and we're going to see what happens, because it was just an opportunity. And I'm very much, as I've got older, it's kind of like, well, if you get an opportunity, why not take it and give it a go? What's the worst thing that can possibly happen? I'll spend a couple of hundred quid on canvases. No one buys it, but it gives me some social media content. That's the way I've looked at it.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully, you know, I'll be able to sell only two pieces, but it's more brand awareness for me, and saying, so they can see the sort of stuff I do and going, well, okay, I like that, but can I have it done this way? So I've never set out to be someone who creates pictures and then hope I sell them. I've always done it with a view that actually I've got a target audience in mind and a specific offering, which is, yeah, I'll work with your brand, I'll work with your colours, it'll be totally for you, it'll be unique, and that's what I'm aiming at, which is what people tend to buy into.
Yeah, it's really clear. As I said, when we first spoke, I didn't know anything about you, but I was exceptionally clear about what you did. You've distilled it down to make it really clear. This is what I'm doing. This is why I do it. This is who it's for, which comes back to the marketing again.
It does. It comes back to all that of knowing what you're trying to do. And you know, if people want to do stuff and then just hope they sell it. Places where I've seen art on galleries hoping to sell, and it's just not my thing. And that's fine. You know, I've got nothing bad to say about anything like that. It's a person's choice. My choice is to create something that there's a reason why people want it, because it will go on their boardroom wall. It just happens to be that's what I'm focusing on. Who knows where it might go?
Yeah.
I've got a big piece on at the moment where someone's asked me to do an abstract history of engineering, which has been quite fun. So it's a 6-foot by 2-foot canvas, but I've actually illustrated, gone back to my roots of actually drawing these bits out, which were then going to turn into abstract. So that was a client who I thought was going to buy some more paintings that I'd done. He went, now I've got a better idea, which then I had to think, how am I going to do this? But it's transpired to be quite a big piece of work, which is fantastic. So there's always challenges and always things to think about, which is kind of perversely exciting, if you know what I mean, because you know, it's always finding a solution for something and trying to be honest with people about, yeah, this is my approach, and if you like it, great. If not, then okay, maybe someone else would do it better.
I just wanted to pick up on something you mentioned earlier on, and we have talked about it a couple of times already, which is the sense that you had being physical in a real world sense gives you something that doing it digitally doesn't. Could you identify what the difference is in terms of how it affects you?
So I've done lots of kind of sketching on iPads and things like that, and it just doesn't do it for me, I'm afraid. I mean, I can get it and I can sketch ideas out and scamps for visuals and brochure design and, you know, other stuff that I do. But for physically doing something, no. I don't know what it is. It's, I don't know. I think it's the feel of something. I think it's the feel. I think it's the smell.
Multisensory,
definitely. Because when first time I got back doing this, I unscrewed a cap of Winsor & Newton acrylic, and the last time I did that was college. It took me right back.
Wow.
To college. I was thinking, yeah. And when someone goes, can I borrow your paint? I mean, how can you borrow paint? I have no idea. But anyway, that's what it took me right back to being at college. I had a friend of mine, so I've created a video that sits on the front of my website, which is me saying what I do. And he's filmed me doing various things. And I think it's just mixing of the paint. It's playing with pouring liquid. It's just doing stuff, making mistakes. There's just something about doing it that way than doing it on electronically. For me, I can't compare the two. And maybe I'm just not good enough. And when it comes to, you know, doing stuff on the iPad, and it's too easy to rub something out and start again, whereas actually you're committing to something. And a friend of mine who videoed me said, it's a really good point. He said, look, Mike, only you can make that mark, whatever it means. And that just gives you the freedom to experiment a little bit more, I think, you know, and walk away if it's not working right. But where else can you throw a bit of concrete on a canvas? You can't do that with your iPad, you know, which is when the supplier said, can I have something different? I'm thinking, what can I do? And I just found some concrete and mixed it and threw it on. And he liked it. Whereas you can't do that if you're messing around with an iPad. That's the difference. It's the smell, the touch, the feel, standing there in the cold and doing some, you know, messing around with the paints and, you know, getting Mrs. H's old hairdryer to dry stuff off because you need it done quicker and things. It's just that whole physical. I think it's making something tangible is what gives me the buzz. mm-hmm. as much as anything else.
Yeah.
That's why I don't really get involved in sort of doing prints and things like that of the work that I do, because it's one off for a client. That's it. It's the original.
Yeah. Well, it's part of your niche. It's part of who you are. Making a print would not be what you do.
I mean, I'll take it and I'll put it onto a notebook. I found various things where I can bolt it onto the website. So actually, as a gift, if they've had a painting with me, they'll get a notebook and I'll put the painting on the front of it. Do it digitally and things like that. So there's lots of things to do. But I think it's about staying true to what I can do rather than trying to be something else and enjoying it. You know, sometimes it's frustrating. I'm not spending as much time as I want to get out and paint because I've got other things on or I'm working with other clients on certain projects. But this is, you know, when I get out there and do it and get stuck into it, I'm quite happy. Not that I'm not happy anyway, but this just makes me even more happy.
Yeah.
You know, part of the inspiration I got from this was my daughter. So I'm hoping at some point there's a chance that she can join the business. So she's 29 next month. She did A-level art, but also did foundation art at Leeds College of Art. And I actually pinned some of her ideas. She knows. And recently we were away at the weekend. She said, Dad, I want to get back into doing some things. So we're hoping that, you know, it'll be time she might. She did a degree in Manchester in arts and various other things. So she's got a creative side to her as well. So that's exciting as to where that could go. And she's got some great ideas. Mm. You know, is there a possibility we can merge those and get her to do some pieces that go in the exhibition as well? So there's lots of, you know, to do. Really cool. It's really exciting. Yeah. I mean, so far it's paying the bills. So that's all right.
Good stuff. One thing before we finish, I wondered if you have, from all the knowledge and all the experience and all the wisdom, whether you have a philosophy or a mantra or a message to give people if they're a little bit concerned about tapping into that unexpressed creativity that they know they've got and they're sitting on.
You just got to go for it. Give it a go. Trust your gut. Give it a go. You know, what's the worst thing that can possibly happen? You know, if it's for yourself, I think you've just got to go for it and do it, because I spent so much time thinking, you know, I need to do it. And it took something like this for me to actually physically go and do it. So probably timing and everything else has just worked out all right. But I think it's about go for it. You know, start off with something that you start right first time. Keep at it. Keep going. And this came from my dad. My dad said, well, you don't want to think you've never given it a go. And this was, my dad worked for Blackpool Council for 40 odd years. And he said, well, you don't want to think you've never tried it. And that would be the biggest thing. If you don't give it a go, you'll never know. People think, what if it doesn't work? Yeah, okay, but what if it does?
Yeah,
that's the other thing. Yeah. What if it does work? And then, hey, you know, you're not tired to doing whatever you want to do. You've got to try these things and give it a go. You only get one shot of doing stuff. You might as well give it a go, give it your best shot, see what happens. Just one other thing. When I set the business up and we went on holiday, we had 3 weeks in Spain. And I think for probably 2.5 of those weeks, I was thinking, what the hell have I done? And I've come back and everything else has been great since. You know, we're going to go through ups and downs, no doubt about it, but I'm committed to doing it. And I think that's the thing. You've got to go for it, stick with it, and see how you go with it. But don't get to the point where you think, I wish I'd given it a go, because I think that would be the worst thing.
Fantastic advice. Yes. Mike, where would you want people to go to if they're trying to find you and might want to work with you?
They can have a look on my website, which is www.njhartstudio.com, or you can drop me an email at mike@njhartstudio.com. And with all these things, I'm more than happy to talk to anyone. If they just want a bit of a chat, have a bouncing idea around, look, if I can help and support anyone in any way, then I'm more than happy to do that. That's been always been my throughout. If I can help anyone, I will put them in the right direction, contact people or whatever. It's just want to bounce around just for a chat. Like I say, I'm looking to start a group at the minute with, there's four other artists in there who I know personally, who we think is an opportunity to collaborate. So yeah, contact me on the website or email is fine.
Fantastic. We'll make sure all of those links are in the show notes. Thank you so much for your time.
Alan, my pleasure.
I think there might be a bit of collaboration going on at some point.
If I can help anyone, you know, it is tough. And I think people don't ask for help. And I think that's part of the thing, is surround yourself with the right people.
Yeah.
Who can help you.
Definitely. Thank you.
No problem.
Such an insightful conversation. And what great lessons we can all learn from Mike in what can happen if you run with opportunities and see where they take you. Now it's creative adventures time, and I promise to share some advice from Holly Matthews on how to choose your creative direction. Like many creative people, Holly is always coming up with ways to express her creativity. Sometimes without even thinking about it, she goes all out exploring her latest passion. And before she knows it, her brain is suggesting it could be the next big business idea. But she's also learnt that sometimes it's not. She shares the story of a difficult time when her late husband was diagnosed with cancer and they were navigating life with two young children and running a business. She took to making pom-poms as a way to manage the overwhelm by staying busy but mindful at the same time. Before she knew it, her creative brain went into overdrive and suggested she could turn her pom-pom making into a thriving business. It was too much. And one day, her late husband took her by the shoulders, looked her in the eyes and said, "Let the pom-poms be the pom-poms." With his wise words, she realised that not every creative expression is for sharing with the world. The pom-poms were for her well-being, to give her peace and joy at a time when her world was fragmenting. It sounds like a sad story, but she remembers it fondly and tells it with a giggle in her voice. I share her love of creativity and have many, many passions and have been trying to figure out who I am creatively and where I should put my energy. As I discussed with Mike in this episode, being clear on my creative direction will make it much easier to be clear on how I talk about what I do. But how do I decide? With Holly's story ringing in my ears, I'm starting to sift through all the possible creative avenues ahead and work out which ones are my pom-poms. And I've just started a really exciting exploration of my creative identity through ancient Chinese wisdom. I'm on a brilliant, eye-opening course with the Five Institute. I'm blown away by how much of what I'm learning resonates. Check out the link to the Vitality Test if you'd like to find out where the energies show up in your profile. I was amazed at how accurate the results were. My dominant energies are fire as a communicator and wood as a creator, seeking freedom to do things my way. The course is sparking possibilities, allowing me to see more clearly, but also to have fun and enjoy the wider exploration. It seems a podcast is a perfect creative expression for me. Giving yourself permission to try lots of things and keep some just for yourself, for the joy of it, is okay. Not everything has to be a career move or have an end goal to be valuable to you. And if a podcast is a creative adventure you'd like to begin, check out the links for Alitu, my podcast recording and editing software, and Captivate, my podcast hosting software. I really couldn't do it without these great, easy-to-use tools. Do you have multiple creative interests? Have you struggled to decide which one or ones to focus on? Do tell us about your experiences in the Creative Switch community. I'd love to hear about your creative adventures. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of The Creative Switch. If you enjoyed it, please leave a review over on podchaser.com. And if you've got any questions, please let me know on Instagram at Nikki_Valance. I do hope you join me next time and my guest for the final episode of the season. I can't believe it'll be number 11. I wouldn't say I've saved the best till last because I've loved every one of my conversations. But I will say you really don't want to miss hearing the creative journey of one of the UK's most inspirational and dynamic female entrepreneurs, empowerment photographer, Tiggs Rice. And remember, why survive when you can thrive?